our 9 o'clock docket this morning. We're going to go a little bit out of order. We'll start with case number 2, Rickett versus Lessicar. If the clerk will please announce counsel.
May it please the court, Mr. Bill Price to argue for appellant and Ms. Teresa Barron to argue for appellee.
All right, Mr. Price.
May it please the court, my name is Bill Price. I'm representing Jopat Rickett, who was the plaintiff in the trial court and is the appellant now. Mr. Len Lessicar is the defendant in this case. This case involves an action. The pleading initially was sworn account and quantum merit. We submitted the case under quantum merit. The facts of the case are as follows. In December of 2005, Mr. Rickett was called by Mr. Lessicar and they regarding seismic interpretation. And what was agreed was Mr. Rickett would do the seismic work. The price per hour was agreed to. After that meeting, nothing was done and nothing could be done until March of 2007. In March of 2007, Mr. Rickett was provided disks containing the computer data by which he could start his interpretation. That was in March of 2007. Between March and August of 2007, Mr. Rickett put in 21 hours before the computer and at least 6 hours in consultation with Mr. Lessicar. On August 10th of 2007, Mr. Lessicar told Mr. Rickett that he would pick a location within 90 days. That never happened. At the end of the year, on December 28th of 2007, Mr. Rickett sent by email a statement for his charges, thinking that Mr. Lessicar might want to write the charges off for that year. Between January of 2008 and May 2008, he made numerous attempts to contact Mr. Lessicar with regard to the work product, with regard to being paid, never had any success. Phone calls were never returned. Finally, in May, he did attempt by telephone to contact Mr. Lessicar and got Mr. Lessicar. There was no agreement to meet with Mr. Rickett, and finally then on July 18th, Mr. Rickett went to Fort Worth and furnished his work product to Mr. Lessicar. Once again, Mr. Lessicar was not available, so his secretary, Linda Varner, signed a receipt pertaining to the work product. In September of 2008, there was a conversation that dealt with what the work product consisted of. On October 1st, Mr. Rickett filed suit in Young County and the case was transferred to the 48th Court in Fort Worth, Tarrant County, and that's the appeal was made from that court after a take-nothing decision by the court, 48th Judicial District Court. In an action for quantum merit, there are four elements. Those four elements are, one, that plaintiff provided valuable services or materials. Two, the services and materials were provided for the defendant. Three, the defendant accepted the services or materials. And four, the defendant had reasonable notice that plaintiff expected compensation for the services or materials. I'm going to reserve my argument mainly for the valuable services because I think, as a matter of law, three elements were proved. The three elements that I think were proved without more are the services provided were provided for the defendant. In this case, there's no question there are only two parties involved. He wasn't a third-party beneficiary to a contract. He was the services. The services were strictly between the plaintiff and defendant. There was no other party. The fact that he accepted the services, I think, is without question. The standard for this element is set out in the Colbert case, which is cited in my brief, and it is if the defendant knew the services were being furnished and made no objection. And certainly there was no evidence of any objection, particularly during this time period between March and August when Mr. Rickett spent 6 hours with Mr. Lesker. Objection could have been made at any time during that period of time. And then the third element, defendant had reasonable notice that plaintiff expected compensation. I don't think there can be any question that Mr. Rickett expected compensation when on the first meeting his hourly charges were discussed. The fourth element, quantum merit, was valuable services. And
let me ask you a question. You emphasized in your briefing that the statement was made, I'll select a drilling site in 90 days. What import does that have from your standpoint?
Well, from my standpoint, it indicates that at that point in time, he had garnered enough information and from Mr. Rickett to determine where he wanted to drill.
Well,
that's the only interpretation.
Do you dispute that there was supposed to be at least an oral summary analysis report made?
It was Mr. Rickett's intention to give a final report when he produced the work product, and the only reason he didn't make a final report was because he could never contact Mr. Lesker. He could never contact him.
What would be the need of a final report if there was already enough information there after to make a drilling decision without it?
Well, a lot of times the drilling decision may have been on one area. His testimony was that they had concentrated on the northeast corner of the tracks. And the final report would have not only included a report on the northeast section, but all sections.
Well, what is your response to the assertion that these attachments are, let's not call them incomprehensible, let's say that they have differences between them?
I deny that.
And hence, you couldn't make a drilling decision based on them.
Well, I would deny that. The only evidence they have on inconsistencies or problems with the maps are from Mr. Lesker. Mr. Lesker openly admitted that he was not an expert and had to have experts interpret the seismic work. And I would like to use, for example, this fallacy and smokescreen of inconsistencies. Just take defendants, in the brief and at trial, they went through a lot of the maps saying they were inconsistent, but they really weren't inconsistent. And I just picked one as an example, and that's Defendants Exhibit 1 and 2.
All right.
If you take those, the checkerboard effect is location in that area, the lines and the traces. The colors on the right-hand side are computer-generated, and they actually represent times, the time that the sound takes to go from the surface to that formation and come back. So if you multiplied times the speed, you would get a depth. But actually, these are times, which could be converted to depth. But the column, the colors on the right are computer-generated, and there could be anything. They're random. It doesn't matter what color they are. For example, number one was a preliminary map. Number two was a final map. And up in the upper left-hand corner, you can see 706. It's in the blue on the preliminary map, defendant's exhibit number one. That's the contour. And by the way, the contour, of course, this is the Caddo horizon or Caddo formation, and the colors are to illustrate the hills and valleys of that formation. The contours, of course, are the top of that formation at that point. So that .06 was illustrated by blue on defendant's exhibit number one. If you turn over to plaintiff's exhibit number two, it's green. But they match up with the chart on the right that's computer generated. They all fit into the appropriate depth, or the appropriate times, actually, but they fit. They're not inconsistent at all. It's sort of like no matter what color shirt I have on, I'm the same person. And that's the case with these maps. They're not inconsistent. The contours of the map.
Can you clarify for me, though, the objection or the objective of the services that were rendered? Was it to determine the location of a drilling site?
Yes, it was to determine the location of a drilling site or also seismic data determines where you shouldn't drill.
Okay, then why would the plaintiff have been relying or waiting upon the defendant to tell him what the drilling site was if that's what the plaintiff was hiring him for?
My understanding is that they had discussed several drilling sites, and he was going to make up his mind. And he had to wait in order to find out which drilling site was being picked.
Well, how was he able to do a final report then?
A final report?
The one that he delivered to the secretary.
The final report covered all areas, covered all three areas. So that's how he was able to prepare a final report. A final report was just his analysis of the seismic data. That's all it was.
Well, are you telling me that the crux of the problem here is whether or not there was an anticipation of a oral or written final report?
I don't think there was an anticipation. I think that's just a smoke screen. There was obviously no meeting of the minds at the time all this was being done as to whether the final report should have been oral or written. That was a matter of dispute. Mr. Ricketts stated that he had in his years, and he is a doctor, has his doctorate in physics, had been in the geophysics vocation for more than 40 years, that he had never before given a written report. But he did state, and I might note that...
Here, let me see if I can get to the point here. So you, first of all, say there's not a meeting of the mind as to whether or not there was going to be a final report, whether it's oral or written, and next there's... the crux then of the dispute is not that, but it's whether or not the information that was provided through the seismic reports was usable or not. You say it was, and they say it wasn't without a final report.
Well,
the bottom line,
I think it obviously was usable, or he wouldn't have been able to say
that.
That
the question. I'm trying to get to the question. Is that the dispute? You say the final report, or you say the information provided was usable because they said they're going to take it and have you drilling site in 90 days, and they say it wasn't usable. We needed a final report.
I think the reason they say it wasn't usable is because he didn't want to pay.
My question is that the question?
I guess it is.
Okay. All right. That's just what I'm trying to distill down as the question, the big dispute here as to whether the information provided was usable or not.
I think that is the crux of the situation, is whether the materials, and I might add that the only person that they had on the stand to say that the work product was not usable was Mr. Lesker himself, and he admitted he wasn't an expert and needed experts to help him interpret the seismic data.
And who did you have on the stand to say that it was usable?
Well, Mr. Rickett got on the stand under questions from Mr. Worley, the trial attorney for Mr. Lesker, and they took the map that is page one on plaintiff's exhibit number one, and they went through that, and there was a red area, and Mr. Worley said, and what do you determine by the red area? And he said, it's a high, and if you wanted to drill in this formation, which was a shallow formation, you would drill on that red location.
What I asked you was, who did you have to espouse your point of view? And the answer, I think, is, well, the principals here both took the stand and both testified in opposite fashion.
That's correct.
Whether or not the information is usable.
That's correct. One was a geophysicist. One admitted he had no expertise.
But if he had no expertise, that sort of tells me that he needed a final report to interpret the data for him. Does it not?
He would have gotten the final report had he the quote on page 3 of the Appellee's brief. It said when they were quoting Mr. Rickett, said when he brought up the written report, I told him I'd be glad to do that. That's no problem at all, but I wanted him to pay me first. Well, that's not all of the quote.
Okay, well, your time's up, so you can go back to that when you get back for your rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Ms. Barron, and am I saying your name correctly?
You are.
All right, thank you.
All right, Ms. Barron, do you agree that the issue in the case is whether or not the information provided was usable? Are we on the same page?
I would agree that that is one of the issues in the case, and that the testimony between the two witnesses, Rickett on the one hand and Lessiger on the other, is conflicting. And under this standard of review, the court must conflicting testimony is not considered. The appellant's fundamental flaw is that his argument fails to meet the standard of review. And Rickett seeks rendition of the trial court's judgment. Therefore, the legal sufficiency standard of review applies. Under that standard, Rickett must show that, one, there is no evidence supporting the trial court's judgment, and, two, that he established conclusively his claim for quantum merit as a matter of law. Now, Rickett admits that there's conflicting testimony between the two witnesses, as already stated. And the trial court found that Rickett's testimony was not credible. Therefore, Rickett cannot establish his claim for quantum merit. Now, even if he was challenging it under a factual sufficiency standard of review, he still could not prevail because there's plenty of evidence to support the trial court's judgment. So under either standard of review, there is no error.
Okay, but you're not going to dispute that he was hired to do some work, and that he did some work, and that he provided that work to your client.
I would dispute that to a certain extent. Yes, he did agree to do the work. They agreed upon the terms. They reached an agreement, which was an express contract. He provided some of the work to the client. Now, it was an agreement that he would provide the maps and charts and a report, whether it be – there's conflicting testimony as to whether it would be an oral report or a written report. Now, no report was ever given. And as Rickett pointed out, as the appellant pointed out, Lessiger's not an expert at reading seismic interpretation graphs and maps, and therefore he needed that report to be able to utilize the final work product.
Well, why couldn't he take the information and the work that was done and provide it to somebody else that could interpret it for him, and therefore the information provided should be paid for, even if it wasn't complete? If I hired you to paint my house and you painted the whole house except for the trim around the windows, under quantum merit, you know, just because you didn't finish doesn't mean you aren't entitled to something.
Well,
why couldn't the information that was provided be paid for it, maybe not in, you know, the total amount, and provided to somebody to interpret?
I would agree with that point to a certain extent. Yes, there were some maps that were provided, but they had inconsistencies and errors. So if he took it to another expert, and the trial court could have believed that those still weren't going to be of any value, because with the inconsistencies and errors, the engineer that I do believe it's in the record that he did show it to an engineer, but the engineer wouldn't be able to utilize those maps if there are inconsistencies and errors.
How would you prove that there were errors at the trial court if your client was not an expert?
I can simply show that by looking at defendant's exhibits. If you appellant pointed out the exhibit, defendant's exhibit 1 and exhibit 2. And if you take a look at those maps, he says there's absolutely no inconsistencies. And he's right. The colors don't matter if you look at that. But let's take the colors out of it. And if you look at those two maps, if you just look at the bottom right-hand number on there, it's on exhibit 1, it's 0.7132. And on exhibit on number 2, the bottom number is 0.7510. I can clearly see, without being an expert at reading seismic interpretation maps, that these are different. And how I think that Lesiker would also agree, just by looking at those maps and seeing that there are differences, it can't be utilized, even by an expert such as an engineer.
Does a record reflect at which times exhibit 1 and 2 were provided to the defendant, or were they provided at the same time?
The record is conflicting. The testimony is conflicting as to what was provided at what time. Now, appellant argues, I think in his brief, that there were preliminary maps mixed in with the final work product. Now, even if there were preliminary maps mixed in with the final work product, that still doesn't render any value to Lesiker, because they're conflicting, and preliminary maps, as Rickett testified, are always different from the final work product. Therefore, and they're always going to be corrected. Therefore, there's no value or benefit to Lesiker from Lesiker's point of view. Additionally, the evidence supports that there was no value to Lesiker from Lesiker's point of view because the work wasn't timely delivered. The trial court found that the work was delivered in July 2008, which was a full year after the work was allegedly completed in June 2007, and that's finding of fact number 9. Therefore, the trial court could have believed that this was not valuable to Lesiker at that time. And we've also already discussed the inconsistencies and errors and the fact that there was potentially preliminary reports included, preliminary maps included in that final work product. And therefore, this evidence supports the trial court's judgment and negates Rickett's claim for quantum merit. Also, again, I think it's already been discussed that there's no report, written or oral, and the trial court found that Rickett's testimony was not credible as to what services were rendered, and that was a finding of fact. So the trial court could have believed that without this report, the maps were simply useless to Lesiker from his point of view.
Now, was it the trial judge's job to decide, okay, the services rendered are worth the amount that was requested or not? You either get the amount requested or zero. Or was it the trial court's job to make a determination as to what the value was if it wasn't as much as was being requested?
Well, the trial court's job was to determine whether he was entitled to recover for any value of services that were provided.
So it was the trial court's job to set a value on the services which might or might not equal the amount that was being requested.
And here the trial court found that there was no value.
Absolutely no value at all in any of this map.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. That he could not use those maps. There was no value for the maps or the work product to Lesiker. To Lesiker, from Lesiker's point of view. He could not use those maps. They weren't timely delivered. The maps did not help him decide whether to designate a drill site or not, and therefore, there was a take-nothing judgment.
How do you explain they weren't timely delivered when apparently there were numerous attempted phone calls which were not returned, and finally he just had to bring them down here and present them and get a receipt for them?
Your Honor, there was no agreement that they would have to meet up to get the final delivery of the work product. And, in fact, he didn't have to meet with him to receive some of the work product. In fact, Rickett dropped off the maps, and it's conflicting what was actually in the final work product.
But he
dropped off that work product. And therefore, it could have been that he could have also dropped off a written report that Lesiker then could have used and utilized to determine whether or not to designate a drill site.
Well, how do you explain away the I'm going to select a drilling site in 90 days statement? Or do you just dispute that was ever said?
Well, there is that's allegedly said, but even if it was said, that had to have been at best based on preliminary reports or preliminary information that was provided to Lessiker, and we already know that based on Ricketts' testimony, those preliminary reports are always subject to change and will always change and be corrected.
How does that explain away the statement that he made after I looked at the information that you provided me and the conversations apparently totaling what it was, 15 hours or whatever, I'm going to choose a drilling site in 90 days?
Well, how could
how could it not have been of any value?
Again, that testimony is in conflict. That's just alleged that he said.
Your client says it never happened.
I would have to look at the testimony to see. I'm not sure if there is a direct statement to conflict that testimony. But I also would point out that the court found that Ricketts' testimony was not credible with regard to certain aspects.
It's hard for me to conceive that I can't pick a drilling site, so I go out and I hire someone. He gives me information and we have conversations, and then I tell him I'm going to pick a drilling site, obviously based on his information in 90 days, and then the trial court decides that it's no value.
The final fact is that he never did actually pick a drilling site. So perhaps he got into it, and the trial court could have believed that after 90 days he realized he could not pick a drilling site based on the information that he had already received.
But wasn't the plaintiff's testimony that was the main purpose of the continued phone calls to the defendant? Was to find out what drilling site he had selected, and those calls were not returned.
My understanding is that was not exactly the situation, that he was trying to make phone calls to a defendant to set up a time to deliver the work product. And we find that, in fact, he didn't need to meet with Lessiker to deliver the work product.
Ms. Brown, the findings of fact that were in the record indicate that the focus of the first five or six of the findings of fact are dealing with the issue of count. And I take it it's your client's position that there was, in fact, an agreement in terms of the contract to provide the services, but that the defendant simply didn't comply with that agreement.
That is correct, Your Honor, and I would also state that is a legal reason why Rickett is not entitled to his quantum merit claim, because there is an express contract in place.
And he gets no quantum merit.
That's correct.
Then,
yes,
even sir. If there wasn't a contract, the findings of the trial court were that the plaintiff failed to provide and offer any evidence whether the hours that the claim was necessary to provide the seismic interpretation. In other words, even if it was only of quantum merit, that the proof failed of being exact kind of proof necessary to prove up the hours that he claimed he was trying to get paid for.
That is exactly what we're stating, Your Honor.
Well, how do you dispute? I thought you agreed that there was no agreement as to whether or not there would be a report, whether or not it would be oral or written.
I agree that was one part of the agreement that was not reached. However,
it was not a material term.
It was not a material term. The agreement was that there would be a report given. There's a dispute as to whether it would be oral or written. So it's material that there needed to be a report, but the dispute exists as to how that report would be provided. And the evidence show that report was never given, either oral or written.
So there is not conflicting evidence as to whether there would be a report?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Barron, I was almost through a moment ago.
Sorry.
In the conclusions of law, section number 3, the court determined that there was not sufficient proof to determine that there were services provided and when the services were provided. And in fact, in the conclusion of fact, determined that plaintiff's testimony was not reliable.
Yes, Your Honor.
So this plaintiff seeks to recover on quantum merit as they stand before this court today. In opposition to the findings of the trial court that there wasn't proof to sustain that claim.
Correct.
Thank you.
And so we shouldn't put any import that you didn't make your not entitled to quantum merit, your lead dog argument, put it back, put it over here in paragraph F.
Yes, Your Honor. We feel that the court can find and affirm the judgment based on the standard of review and the fact that Rickett cannot establish his quantum merit claim. And in the alternative, also, that under quantum merit, you cannot recover if there's an express contract. If there are no other questions, I would close that. Because there's more than enough evidence to support the trial court's judgment, and because Rickett failed to prove his claim as a matter of law, Lessiker prays that the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Barron.
Thank you.
Mr. Price, rebuttal.
The first thing I'd like to cover is about the contract. I concluded there was no express contract, and Mr. Worley, the trial court attorney, concluded the same thing on page 19, if you'll read 18 through 20.3. But even if you can say there is an express contract, we still fit in the exception that quantum merit applies on partial performance because it is agreed that there was going to be a final report, which we claim would have been given, except he couldn't meet, Mr. Lessiker would never meet with him. But there was partial performance that we performed everything but the final report. Partial performance is an exception if there's an express contract. I don't think there was, but even if there was, we fit the exception. Now I want to go to what she was talking, inconsistency and errors. They have pointed out no errors. There's not any mention of errors. It all has to do with colors and the column on the right. The column on the right is adjusted by the computer. And these figures change by data that's put into the computer. These figures may change, but this, like line 706, is still at the same place on these times or depths. It doesn't change. They're the same. These figures can be changed, but this will always fit within the timelines over on the right. They're computer generated.
Mr. Price, how do you respond to the contention of the appellee that the standard of review is, was there adequate evidence to support the findings of fact and conclusions of law of the trial court, and that we're to address that issue in a way that if there was sufficient evidence for the trial court to make the findings or any evidence to support the findings, then the standard of review has to be observed and your client didn't meet it?
Well, I'm not really, I really don't, I guess I don't follow you.
Well, I'm asking you, is your appeal is to attack the findings of fact and conclusions of law that rendered in the trial court.
That's right.
Correct.
That's right.
And if those findings, when we read them and they say what they say in terms of what the trial court found about the evidence, and that was that your client's testimony was inadequate to prove the hours spent and the value of the hours spent to the plaintiff. If that's the conclusions, the factual conclusions, then aren't we faced with an issue that if there was conflicting evidence in the trial court and the trial court found against your client, that you have the burden to show how the trial court had no evidence to sustain its findings?
I didn't think that the standard was no evidence. We can ask that it be remanded for a new trial and that it's the findings of the court were contrary to the greater weight of evidence, so much so that they were unjust. With regard to the time spent, there was only the only testimony as to the time spent was Dr. Rickett. It was never disputed. Never disputed. With regard to untimely, I don't know where that came in. I don't know where that issue ever arose. I guess it arose from the trial court's finding of fact. But it's preposterous to say that my client was untimely. He did all the work from March to August. He had it completed, and the time from that period on was waiting for him to pick a location, and then after January of 2008, trying to contact him. Never could contact him. He'd never return a call. And with regard to...
I think the problem is we have conflicting evidence as to the value of the services presented, and because the trial court found that they didn't have value, your burden is to show that it's basically unjust, it's against the greater weight, and so forth and so on. And when you have conflicting evidence as to value, that's very difficult to do.
Well, I think the greater weight of the evidence, the only evidence that they have that it has no value at all was this silly thing that it was inconsistent with regard to colors. That's the only evidence they had. They had no other evidence that it wasn't valuable. None. And Mr. Lesker himself admitted he was no expert. But they got up and made a big deal about these colors.
That kind of implies he may need more than that because he's not an expert.
He probably didn't need more than that, maybe. It evidently, or else he didn't learn very much from his 6 hours of consultation. But...
All right, Mr. Price, your time is expired. We appreciate your rebuttal. Counsel, we appreciate your submissions today. Your case is submitted, and you are excused.